Wow, I think, how have I been living like this? It's kind of like when you find out that you've been paying a fortune for wireless when Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. You're thinking, wow, how have I been affording getting gouged so bad? It's time to make the switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. And I mean, Mint Mobile's quality of wireless service is unbelievable. Say bye-bye to the overpriced wireless plan, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. They slow you down and completely screw with you. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you. With premium wireless plans starting at just $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with your existing contacts. Ditched overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited plan deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. Get this new customer offer and your new 3 month unlimited wireless plan for only $15 a month. Go to mintmobile.com/Bubba. That's mintmobile.com/BUBBA. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/Bubba. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3 month plan only. Speed slower than 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fee, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. Hey, it's Bubba the Love Sponge. You know, crotch discomfort might be just hurting your game. Fear no more. The kings of the crotch comfort, Manscaped, have spent 2 years designing the most comfortable boxer briefs out there. The brand new Boxers 2.0 from Manscaped take your balls to the royal ball throne. The global leaders in below-the-waist grooming also have the Lawnmower 4.0 for that trimming that you need so that you can wear the boxers and chill. They've even trademarked the jewel pouch, so you know it's serious. I think it's time for you to invest in your family jewels, my friend. So let your bulge breathe and get 20% off plus free shipping by using the Bubba code at manscaped.com. Be proud of your underwear and wear the Manscaped waistband with a badge of honor. Your balls deserve it. Again, you got the Lawnmower 4.0, you got the Boxers 2.0, and you got the Jewel Pouch. What else could you want? It's all happening at manscaped.com, promo code Bubba. Again, get 20% off and free shipping with Bubba as your promo code at manscaped.com. Up your crotch game, because once the Boxers 2.0 touch your sack, you'll never go back.
Hello. Welcome to Off the Rails with Blummel. This is getting me hype. It is finally Friday, even though it felt like Friday on Tuesday. I was exhausted from what I don't know. My life isn't that difficult, but it is officially Friday, which means it's the weekend and anything is possible. We're probably going to get so much stuff done and go for walks and runs and bike rides, and probably not. Probably just sit on our asses and then eat some food. Blitz is here. Are you on? Is your mic on? Maybe? We're getting things set up, folks. Uh-oh. All right. 813-90-BUBBA if you'd like to call in and join the conversation. Maybe it's Dead Battery Jones. Not quite sure what's going on, but we'll figure it out. It's not a problem. This week... Can you hear me?
It just wasn't plugged in all the way.
Oh, okay. There we go.
Now it should be good.
Oh, perfect.
That Yay. Sounds... That was my fault.
Oh, no problem. So we got a lot of things in store for this weekend. No, we don't. Actually, we have pretty much nothing, which is the best type of weekend to have because you just got everything wide open. Yeah, we're still going to do stuff, but we got no definitive plans. Please, no one now text us or call us because you need help moving or something, because then we will, in fact, find plans, and then we will be busy. So please don't. Please don't do that. Let's just take a call right out the gate. Hello, who's this?
Well, I'm Florida Stanley.
Yes, what's going on, man? How are you? How are your the feeling in your fingers?
It still tingles, but whatever. That's okay. Probably going to be for a while.
Jet Ski Stanley.
Yeah.
Jet Ski Stanley.
Jet Ski Stanley, yeah. No, we are not changing my name to Jet Ski Stanley. So, Blitz, I watched Jasper Mall two nights ago.
Christ.
Good, isn't it?
There is no fucking way that is real. That can't be real. That there's no way that all that humanity is locked in one small area.
Sure it is.
Jasper, Georgia,
why
right?
Why wouldn't it be real? Alabama, I think.
Anna, did you watch it?
I watched probably a cool 45 minutes of the end.
Oh, my God. How did you turn it off? I couldn't turn it off.
No. I mean, like, we started, I think he started showing it to me midway through, and I'm like, this is dumb. And then all of a sudden, I became hypnotized, and I watched the entire thing.
Oh, so you didn't even see the haircut at the beginning. Oh, my God.
No, I missed the haircut.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Jesus.
The one that wasn't even?
It wasn't even. Stevie Wonder could have done a better job.
I know.
I don't.
Yeah, well,
but hold on.
Have you watched it? I didn't.
No,
I missed the
first of course not. But like, you see what I mean? Like, it's horrible, but it hooks you in.
And it pulls you in.
I'm telling you, Blitz. I'm telling you, that has got to be. It's a spoof filmed as a documentary.
It's not.
It can't be real.
It's real.
Oh my God.
What do you think Bubba's going to
do about
it?
I'm going to make a trip. Is it still open?
Yeah, so there's like Facebook groups of people that have traveled up there, and they have pictures. It's like a big deal now. It's
God.
The guy, Mike, or whatever his name is, he's like, takes pictures of people. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Supposedly he's still
I have got, I'm definitely going to make a trip up there. Maybe September. I got too much going on.
I would love to know the brainchild of that. Like, who thought it was a good idea?
Right.
Who was captivated by the story of Jasper Mall and thought it was good enough to make a documentary?
It says if you look on the wiki, it says it's the same guy that made I can't remember. He made another movie or another documentary that's well known. I can't remember which one it was though, but if you look at the wiki,
how do you hear about, that's the thing is, how do he hear about Jasper Mall? Like you don't just say, hey, I'm going to make a movie about Jasper Mall. You're
right.
Like, you got to hear about it first. Someone's got to tell you.
It almost seems like, you know, those shows, like those cooking shows where it's like, you have three ingredients, like pineapples, tuna and pickles, and you got to make a meal. It's like, they're like, you have to make a documentary on Jasper Mall. And they're like, oh shit, how the fuck am I going to do this? And they pull it off.
Yeah.
I tell you what, if they would have made a documentary about any other mall, it would have been boring as shit. That was
But I'm telling you, though,
It was so horrible, it was good.
I'm willing to bet that same mall scenario plays out all over the country.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. But the personality of the people is just what made it.
Or the lack thereof.
Just these empty vessels, you know? But you find their story so captivating.
Well, they live in Jasper, Alabama. What else do they have to look forward to?
Yeah, yeah.
Precisely. Just going to the mall.
Besides their friends dying that they play dominoes with.
I know. Isn't that how it ends?
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Wanted to call
and
tell you I watched it.
Thank you.
Yeah. I've said from day one, it's not good.
No.
But, like, it's captivating. And it's, like, literally, if you have time to kill and you're like, I've seen everything else, what am I going to watch? Like, it's kind of, it's interesting.
You know what it is? You know the state of mind that you're in when you're just sitting on a public bench watching people, watching?
Yeah.
That's the same feeling. You just feel like you're sitting on a bench and you're just watching people go by. And you're kind of having like a reflective moment. You know, you see someone go by and you go, that person has a whole life history. I wonder where they're from. I wonder what their family's like. Like, it's the same sort of feeling watching Jasper Mall.
Jack is also right. He said he was hoping it would have gotten better. That's the other thing, too, is you watch it the whole time. You're like, all right, it's about
waiting
to get
for the
good.
High spot.
You're like, it's about to get good. The whole time you're watching it, it's about to get good. And it never
It's like
does.
A sneeze that you can't, and you can't sneeze it out. You feel the feeling of an impending sneeze and you lose it. And that's what Jasper Mall is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the hope that I guess we just ruined it for people. But yeah, you're really hoping for the high spot. You're like, someone's going to die. Someone's going to get eaten by a tiger, fall off the Ferris wheel. But no, nothing happens.
Well, that guy, Mike, that's a security guard, started out as a roadside zoo owner.
He's kind of like a Dark Match Joe Exotic.
And that's what he was.
Yeah, yeah. But just not as, it didn't quite have the charisma of one Joe Exotic.
Right.
You know? But just a lot less boring. I think the best part and the worst part, the part of the movie that made me like actively question why am I watching this, is when isn't he giving like a little bit of a tour of like a dark warehouse? Like, he's like, check out this. And he brings someone in a dark area of the mall.
I'm like, why the fuck am I watching this? They show where the Kmart used to be. And he walks into the Kmart. And it's like a 10-minute thing. Like, it should be a 30-second part of it.
It's literally just a vacant, like, store.
Walking around with a flashlight for, like, 10 minutes. And you're like, what the hell?
I think we actually fast-forwarded a little bit. At least for me. I'm like, this. I need a little bit more action. Take me back to the very young interracial couple. With the enormous white chick and the skinny black guy. Like, that I found to be the most captivating story that was told.
Oh, yeah.
Because they barely spoke, and it was just...
They obviously knew each other for a few weeks, and they were in love.
Yeah.
And he was like, I'm leaving. I'm going out of town.
Right.
I'll be cheating on you the whole time.
And they talk about a lot of the issues they encountered as an interracial couple with the five words that they both knew.
I know.
You know, they're like, it's my grandmama didn't like it when I was dating a black man. Mm-hmm. And then they pan to him and he's just like, I'm like, wow, this is incredible. So check it out if you haven't. It is, it's good. In a weird way, it's good. It's just like people watching. If you like just sitting and watching people go by, I don't even understand why that's so entertaining or how that's held such a high entertainment value in a world where we have, you know, our smartphones and our computers.
Mm-hmm.
People watching is still just fascinating. It's just something that you can pretty much do for hours. At least I can. I know you can too.
Yeah.
Usually it's made better when it's just, you know, six enormous Latina chicks about to get in a fight in front of a Taco Dirty. Blitz and I, this is probably what, about like 3 months ago or something.
Yeah.
We went to get Taco Dirty, which is one of our favorite places to go get some food.
Rhett's too.
Yeah. That motherfucker refuses to go. They have this broccoli, fried broccoli. It's so fucking good. So good. So we get the food to go, or maybe we ate and we brought, maybe if it was one time I had leftovers, and we went to get in the car. And we see some shit about to go down. I think it's a Sunday, maybe. It was a Sunday fun day, perhaps. Maybe around 4 p.m.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, and there were these probably six or seven or eight. More kept coming.
Mm-hmm.
Enormous.
Because
like,
in that area, there's a bunch of like bars and stuff. Mm-hmm. Where you can, you know, it's not unlikely to walk around, you know, walk a couple blocks.
Right.
Catch an Uber, or you parked across the street and down the road or whatever. So
if you're unfamiliar with the Tampa area, it's this place called Soho, South Howard. And like Blitz said, there's a bunch of restaurants, bars and shit. Mm-hmm. And usually on Sundays, it gets pretty busy, especially during football season. Or if there's any sort of sports or anything, the place is always just popping off. So Taco Dirty's is kind of right in the mix of all that. So we see
great food, worst name ever.
Yes, it's stupid name, but it's fantastic food. And there's like maybe three or four ginormous Latina chicks, and then more just keep coming. Mm-hmm. Like we see, you know, another car pull up, and three more get out, and then we see that there's a little bit of some conflict going on.
A kerfuffle.
Yes, a kerfuffle, if you will. So we get in the car, and I say to Blitz, can we just chill here for a second, eat food, and watch what might go down? And he's like, I wasn't planning on driving away.
Yeah.
You're like, I saw some chick getting loud, and we just posted right up. I remember there was like a Jeep in front of us, and we're like, get the fuck out of the way.
You're like, dude,
we
can't see
this.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm pretty sure we saw some yelling, some screaming, and then I think, remember like a black car pulled up, and one of the Latina chicks went over to the driver's side and like, took a swing.
Yeah, it was weird.
And then we didn't know if they knew each other or if she was just talking shit.
The bouncers from the club.
I was just about to say, there's a bar right across the street.
Yeah.
And we're watching him laser locked on the same situation we are.
Yeah.
And at one point, he just darts out in the middle of the road and like tries to break things up.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
It was
fun.
That
was so good. God, I hope that happens again.
Well, we thought it almost did. Remember the other day? Another group that looked similar last time, they like strolled up and, you know, they were not drunk, but they probably were feeling all right.
Yeah.
And they started doing selfies and stuff. I said, oh, here we go again.
Yeah. It was also Sunday, I believe. Yes, it was.
Yeah. But they was fine.
Yeah. They were like, take a picture. Take a picture. Like she was like screaming at her friend to take a picture of her. She wanted, there was like sprinklers. So I guess it was giving some sort of aesthetic that she wanted to capture. So I kind of, we just stayed for a second, and then as soon as it resolved itself, we're like, all right, let's carry on.
Boring.
We only want fights. We want friggin' haymakers. And it was so funny because, like, all these chicks, these Latina chicks, they were like, some of them were probably two bills.
Oh, yeah.
They were in the, like, I would say 180 to 250, like, all, like every single one, but they're dressing like they're like 125.
Oh, yeah, the real tight.
Yeah, like the tight bodycon sort of deal. A lot of midriffs. I'm like, these girls, I admire the confidence. Like, I'm like, I don't even have the confidence to pull that off. Yeah. But they're just, they don't give a fuck. They're just, and then a lot of times when you're wearing tight clothes, as ladies know, it's hard to make a lot of grand gestures or movements. So when you're throwing like haymakers, like titties are popping out. So we were just like waiting for the show.
Yeah, and it's like it's in the middle of the summer in Florida, so there's like titty sweat dripping off their skin tight stuff.
They got titty sweat, they got roll sweat. Yeah, you know, it was they got nails, so you got that. But it was just, it was crazy. I've never been angered, drunk or sober otherwise, and like taking a swing at someone other than my sister that one time.
Ed
but
Kelly
that was,
says they were all rocking the camel. Well,
A lot of them were wearing skirts and they're riding up pretty high. It was just beautiful. Everything about it was just fantastic. And we were, the only thing that could have been better is if that fucking Jeep wasn't in front of us, so we could have gotten a better view of the things that were about to go down. So that's cool. This week I have been living solo.
Living
by myself, taking care of the cats. For those that don't know, my roommate, and I think a Bubba Army person, like, really donated to, help donate to her church thing that she went on, this mission trip.
Oh, yeah, yeah, they did.
So shout out to whoever that was. I think she reached out to you and thanked you if you're listening. So I had the house myself because my roommate is in Costa Rica right now on a, do they still call it a mission trip?
I think so.
Is that its slave name, or do they call it like a retreat? Like, is there some other name?
A mission trip isn't for slaves.
No, I know, but
it's to reprogram people so they believe this Bible.
Right. Please, it's a re-education camp. So,
yes.
I don't know what people call it. I think it's still called a mission trip, but I don't know if that's the wrong terminology, because sometimes they try to, you know, sugarcoat it. Like, oh, it's a church retreat.
Yeah,
help out thing. So I've been following along loosely, you know, making sure she's alive and whatnot. I did hear from her a couple days ago when she called in to ask about the kitties. I'm like, they're good. Everything's good. Everyone's fed. Everyone has water. We're good. But I am curious, and I will definitely be asking her a lot of questions as I do. And you can usually tell, for those people who have met me, if you give me a little bit about a story. Like, for example, we were speaking with Rhett the other day, and
DeFilthy,
yes, and he started telling us about the Monet incident, and I felt like I really took it to the next level in terms of details. Like, I like to know details, every detail. I like to be walked through a story that I find interesting. This frequently happens with the Diacos if they give me a little nugget about some sort of family dynamic.
Sure.
Or, you know, with the wives and the kids or Daddy Joe or something. And I overhear them say something, and then that's usually when the white lab coat comes on and I start I want to thoroughly go through everything so I can fully understand the situation and analyze it. So I want to ask, you know, my roommate about, you know, what are these people that already are Christian and you're just helping them build a church sort of deal? Or are we, like, converting? Because how does that go down in the 21st century? I'm curious.
Yeah, it's a good question.
Because the way things used to go down, a lot of it was by a conquer in force, right? Like, the way the Romans did things, the way that, you know, during the Crusades. Like, it shocks me sometimes that people still go on mission trips because I'm like, is that kind of like the Crusades? That didn't go well. I mean, it did go well for the, you know, the Crusaders, but not the Crusades, if you know what I mean. A lot of people were forced to convert, otherwise they would be killed. And I'm sure a lot of them were killed anyways. But so I'm always very curious as to, like, the connotation of a mission trip because of the historical nature of conquesting native people and forcing them to adopt your beliefs. Now, I understand you're probably not doing this using the same tactics.
Right.
Like, maybe you're like, here's some food and a Bible. Like, you try to sneak it in, like you sneak in medication with
your
dog food.
I'm sure it's a lot of that.
You know, I just want to know, I assume most of them are already Christian. Let's be real. They speak Spanish. They've already been, you know, conquered by the Spaniards, which were Catholic. So I'm sure a lot of them are like, the work's already been done for you.
Yeah, you would think so.
And then I think, like, haven't these people suffered enough? Like, aren't they? They see white people and they're just like, are you fucking kidding me? But white people bring goodies.
Yeah,
they bring,
that's true.
They do bring the medications. They bring the food. Not all white people. And not all people that they help are people of color. I just want to clarify. But in this situation, typically it's like these, you know, brown people are receiving help from white people and they get the foods and the medication and the supplies. So that's great for them.
Mm-hmm.
But do they like say the words and you're like, I accept Jesus. Mm-hmm. Okay, here you go. There's your food. Like, I want to know, like, what's the transaction? Or are we just indiscriminately helping everybody? Someone explain it to me. Maybe call in if you've been on a mission trip. 813-90-BUBBA.
A real, like, overseas mission trip.
Yeah.
Not like, hey, I went to part of Tampa.
Right.
Handed
no.
Blankets.
No, no. I mean, I want some Costa Rica, Ghana action, something like that.
Yeah.
Where you went overseas, and then what did you, what's the itinerary typically? Do you houses?
I'm willing to bet that what happens is they have a church group there already that live there. And this church group contacts that church group and says, hey, we want to come do a mission. And they say, okay. And there's, you know, 20-ish, 30 people that come down there and they spend a week, you know, walking through town, giving a few things out, helping to like rebuild whatever. And, you know, and but it's like probably, you know, with a local group down there that.
That already is stationed down
there. A group
of
people that are like, hey, we've got it planned that this week we're going to rebuild, you know, so-and-so's house.
See, that's cool as fuck. Like, if it's like a Habitat for Humanity, is that a Christian-run thing or no? The non-denominational...
You know, I know what Habitat for Humanity is, but I don't know.
I think it's... Might be... I don't know. I thought it was run by a church, but now I'm second-guessing myself. If it's shit like that, where you're just rebuilding schools and houses and hospitals, that's fantastic. But if you're like going there just to do like church services, I feel like that's maybe not what the locals need the most. You know, maybe they need
Habitat for Humanity is a Christian organization.
Okay, that's what I thought. That I'm cool with. Like, hey, our church wants to go build some houses. Great, no problem. But I don't know how it would go. It's like, are you trying to convert people? Are you knocking on their aluminum doors saying, hey,
aluminum?
If you have any, what like, cardboard,
scrap metal? I mean, that's good money.
Okay. Cardboard doors. Hey, if you have any, if you're free on Thursday evening, we're doing a little bit of a nighttime service. If you'd like to join us for some plantains and rice.
Bananas?
I don't know how that goes down. Huh?
Bananas.
Yeah, I'm dumb. So what's weird is like some religions are very interested in getting recruits, which is funny because I feel like those are the religions that lead the least amount of recruiting. So like you think about the most popular religions on the planet, I want to say it's Christianity followed by Islam.
Yeah.
In terms of numbers of people who just subscribe to the religion. And if you think about it, those two groups of religions did a fair bit of conquest.
They did.
They forced people to convert against their will. Maybe they took them from other places like Africa and then brought them here and said, this is your new God that you will accept.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of those people's children then subscribe to that religion, blah, blah, blah. You know who's not interested in converting anybody and would prefer less converts are Jews. That is something that I've always really admired and liked about the Jewish culture and faith, is that we have no interest. In fact, we would prefer you didn't convert and you just leave us the fuck alone.
Because I think a lot of it too is, you know, I'm you know, not in the religion and the faith, so I don't know, but I understand it as, hey, look, if you want to convert, fine, I guess. But, like, you know, you're really not Jewish unless your mom's Jewish.
Right. And this is perfectly illustrated in The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, okay. for those that watch it, the brother's wife converts to Judaism. And she's trying to go, like, hardcore Jew.
Well, yeah, okay, there's that, too.
And everyone just rolls their eyes, and they don't want really anything to do with her. Now, it could just be that her character is annoying, and that's probably most of it.
Right.
But for the most part, we don't really want any converts. We don't. It's more of a cultural thing, and you're really not Jewish unless you're born Jewish.
Right.
And if you convert, it's like you're a fake Jew.
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny that we don't, you will never see someone knocking on your door, a Jewish person knocking on your door and saying, hey, have you checked out the new synagogue? It's not what we do. We don't want converts.
So I've noticed this on Riverwalk the last five times or so I've been on there. Like, doesn't matter what time, what day, period, Jehovah's Witnesses are out there set up.
Yeah.
Every time.
They are, they're big hustlers.
Now, I will say.
And Mormons, too.
They have not, like, they don't stop you and say, like, hey, can I talk? Like, unless you walk up to the, because they have, like, a whole setup of, like,
yeah,
posters
you know what
and stuff.
They're there for, right.
Yeah, and they don't, like, props to them. They don't hide it. Like, they say, here's where Jehovah's Witnesses, like, it's, like, written on the sign and all that. And they're not coming up to you and saying, hey, can I talk to you? Like, I think they're supposed to, but they don't. Now, if you walk up to them, obviously they're there to talk and mm-hmm. convert and whatever, sell themselves. But they've been there all day, every day, like, 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Monday, 5 p.m. on a Tuesday, like all weekend. Like, they're always there.
I want to see their analytics. Like, they must be doing that because it must work with some people, right?
Has to.
Otherwise, it's like, because if you're, think about it marketing wise, if doing certain things like posting on Instagram didn't work or, mm-hmm. you know, putting money into advertising didn't work, then companies wouldn't do it. Religion's same way. There must be a small percentage of people that are like, oh, what's this? But I think the people that, you know, they're targeting are probably people that are walking by themselves,
yeah.
alone,
mm-hmm.
you know, going through a hard time. Because there's a lot of people amongst us, we've all experienced times where you're just in dire straits, either financially, emotionally, your relationship, your kids, whatever, and you're going through a hard time and you're just kind of looking for, this sounds trite, but a sign,
yeah.
you know, and then suddenly someone comes up to you and they want to be near you and they want you to join their community and you feel like you know, need a sense of belonging because that's a very human instinct, is I need to belong somewhere with some group. And so that must work some of the time. Otherwise they wouldn't do it, right? Like,
yeah. And I think a lot of religions kind of
prey on that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. People who, because you don't see, like,
vulnerable people yeah. or people that are just in a vulnerable time.
Yeah, you don't see people doing mission trips in, you know, Hollywood Hills,
yeah,
Beverly
too,
Hills.
So along with, like, the Mormons, the Jehovah's Witnesses also are big door-to-door salesmen.
Yeah, they're in great shape, most of them.
And I gotta wonder, like, how many people on that too are you
right.
like
because that's different than going to someone's house and, like, interrupting them or bothering them.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, how many people? Because, like,
it must work sometimes.
Nobody, like, I don't care what you do. You come to my house, like, unless you're a kid selling cookies, like, whatever, okay.
Or an Amazon package delivery guy.
Well, that's different.
They just leave it on the doorstep.
Yeah, but I mean, like, trying to actually, like, sell you something.
yeah.
Like, I'm like, I don't care what it is. Like, I'm gonna definitely not buy it now. You're like, get out of here. You're bothering
mm-hmm.
me.
Right. You're soliciting. No solicitors. No, thank you.
Yeah.
But that must work for some people. Now, you got to think about the quality or type of person that's working on. I mean, Jesus fucking Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Literally. How does that, I mean, are they just so gullible? Do they think every idea is the best idea? Do they have just an incredibly, this is going to sound mean, incredibly low IQ? Like, I can't imagine, like you said, it should anger you if someone comes to your house trying to get you.
Yeah.
Essentially, they're saying, whatever your belief system is, yours is inferior to mine, and mm-hmm. I'm trying to get you to come to the light. Because I am right, and you are wrong or on the wrong path, and
yeah.
I need you to go down my path.
And now
that's what you're saying to me.
Yeah,
go fuck yourself.
And it's so, and I've noticed them on Riverwalk, you know, they're all in all different places. They're always somewhere different. But, like, I'm okay with that as well. They're not bothering anybody.
Yes.
Like, they're set up there. They're
sometimes they sing and whatnot, but that's fine.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of that. But they're always, like, they're dressed well. They have a nice little setup. And I haven't seen them, like, actively going and bothering anyone. So, like, I'm
mm-hmm.
okay with that.
Yeah, that's fine.
No
You're
problem.
Just, you know, you have a stand or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
No different than you selling lemonade, but that's fine. I don't really care.
I'd have more problem with that, really.
With the lemonade?
Trying to set up a business there, like...
Oh, well, I mean, religion's a business.
I understand what you're saying. Not.
Yeah, so I just want to know, like, who that's working on, because it must work some of the time. And I think they're just trying to catch the right person at the right person at the wrong time of their life, if that makes sense. Where they're looking for a sign, and they get it. 813-90-BUBBA, I think we had a few phone calls. I would like to hear from people who've been on mission trips and, you know, what the itinerary is, what the goals typically are, and how you communicate with the locals, especially if you don't even speak their language. I'm sure there's translators and shit, but I wonder what the locals feel about, like, the people that come to save them. Mm-hmm. If they, I mean, of course, if they're bringing goodies and supplies, that's always nice. But in terms of like, oh, great, now I got to listen to this fucking lecture for 2 hours before I get my free cookie. Mm-hmm. So, because we've all done shit like that. We're like, all right, give me the spiel so I can get the free chapstick. I just want, just give it to me.
Oh, yeah. Every now and then you get the timeshare deals. Have you seen those?
Like, yeah. Hey,
we'll take you out to dinner, or like the investment guys, right, or whatever. Like, I won't do that. I don't care.
No, thank you. Please, no, thank you. Let's take this call. Hello, who's this?
Hey, sorry to interrupt you. I was just going to say, you remember those people that, like, the kids that walked around, they're like Mormons or something? They called themselves Elder John, or I'm Elder Lee, or something. You know what I mean?
They would always
say Elder, and then, yeah, they were usually like 15 or 16.
Why would they call themselves elders?
Yeah, they would be like, I'm Elder John, or I'm Brother
Elder
John. Anyways. But anyways, they would walk around and they wanted to talk to you about their religion and stuff, but they would come help you or do stuff like that every now and then. But anyways, the story is, like, when we were kids in our town, these guys would ride around on these bicycles, and they'd have their little backpacks and their books and whatnot, and then they would want to come talk to you about their religion. My mom's like, yeah, sure, y'all come on over, tell me all about it. And then we sat there for like 3 hours while they picked weeds and did yard work for my mom. And she gave them drinks and food and stuff, but she didn't give them no money. And she listened to what they had to say, but she literally made them dudes work in her garden for like 2 or 3 hours one day. And they're like, we got to go.
Oh, that's pretty
funny.
It's pretty sly.
I just figured you guys would like that story. It was pretty good to get some yard work done.
Yeah, okay.
I wish I could remember what religion it was.
It was Mormons.
Yeah. Y'all have a good one.
Thank you.
If they were elders going door to door dressed up with backpacks, especially bicycles, that's a very Mormon thing.
Yes. That was a very popular costume when I was in college.
Okay.
Which was always, the first time I saw it, I thought it was great. Like, it would just be, you know, a bunch of drunk people, and then you'd see just two guys on a bike with the outfit and the backpack.
Yeah.
And they were just like fucking wasted. I'm like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Hello, who's this? Hello. Hi. You're on Blummel off the rails. What's going on?
Just wanted to talk to you about the people knocking at your door, the religious people.
Yep. Yeah.
You're thinking of it from the wrong point of view.
Oh, okay.
From the church point of view, it's actually pushing those people closer to the church, because every door they knock on, they get hated on, or they act like they're just a bother. You know how you guys act, or everybody acts to them. So it makes them closer to their church members, because that's the only group that they can identify with.
Okay, I guess I see that.
Like,
it's twofold. Hey, number one, we're sending you out and making you closer to the church, because all these people hate you, but the church loves you. And twofold, and the other thing is, we might recruit some people too.
Exactly,
interesting.
Exactly.
So it's kind of like basic training, where you band together when you go through hard times, because everyone's like, "Fuck off! I hate you.
Exactly.
God's dead." Okay, I get that. Kind of almost like an initiation deal.
Yeah.
I kind of understand that.
Thanks.
That's smart. I didn't think about it that way.
Have a great show.
All right, thank you.
See you guys later. Bye.
Yeah, I wonder if it's kind of like an initiation thing, where like the newbies, because it's always like young people typically.
I believe so, and I know like they're required to do that. I know like Jehovah's Witnesses, I forget what it is, but like I had some friends growing up that were part of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to do that like every so often. I forget, you know, whatever the requirement was, and they had to go do that.
Yeah. Yeah. No thanks.
Yeah.
I don't soliciting religion. It again, like, how are you convincing people in a 30-second spiel to turn their life? And because it's not usually a small commitment. It's like, we want you to go to church. you know, weekly, biweekly, three times a week, get involved, all that sort of shit. What I do like about, again, the Jewish community, and I'm not saying that there's a lot to love, but this I do like, is that they're very libertarian in this way. You guys do whatever you fucking want. We're going to do our thing. We're not trying to, I don't understand why people feel like they need to get recruits. Is it must be just the money, right? Like, why does Christianity need more recruits? I guess that's kind of just baked into the gospel and you're supposed to spread the word. Like, that's just baked into the pillars of the religion itself.
The more people that they have on their side, basically, the better off they are.
Yeah.
And with that comes money and other things, but, numbers. Right. It's a numbers game. That's what you want.
Yeah. I just, no thank you is what I have to say to that. No thank you. Let's take a short break for editing purposes. We'll be back within a couple minutes. And I do want to get into some pretty controversial stuff that I was researching yesterday, as I tend to do. Be right back.
Wow, I think, how have I been living like this? Kind of like when you find out that you've been paying a fortune for wireless when Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. You're thinking, wow, how have I been affording getting gouged so bad? It's time to make the switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. And I mean, Mint Mobile's quality of wireless service is unbelievable. Say bye-bye to the overpriced wireless plan, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. They slow you down and completely screw with you. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans starting at just $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited plan deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. Get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for only $15 a month. Go to mintmobile.com/Bubba. That's mintmobile.com/BUBBA. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/Bubba. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower than 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fee, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
Groovy! Welcome back to Off the Rails with Blummel. We'll be here for 15, 20 minutes-ish. We'll see where it takes us.
It's the weekend.
813-90-BUBBA. Sure is. I'm thinking I might make something, some treats. I don't know. We'll see how we go. I definitely need to go for a run. And then probably head over to your place. Hang out for the weekend. Doing a little bit of jujitsu tomorrow. And that is the only thing I have locked and loaded. 813-90-BUBBA.
This guy in chat wants to know if you'll ever let me go riding again.
Yeah, you can go riding on your four-wheeler?
I would assume so.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
she's
never let him go.
Yeah, so she's never said no. No. I haven't had the time to go, so.
Yeah. Oh, he's gone and done firework stuff. Not that that's firework stuff, but, you know, if he wants to go do that, he goes and does that sort of thing.
I need you to stand too.
Yeah. We're not a controlling bunch of people. You gotta let people live their lives. Blitz has a lot of hobbies. I have a few hobbies. Brunch is one of my hobbies.
Ed Kelly, was that you that sent the mixer? So make sure you grab that mixer if you're gonna go take
bake. Oh, yes. Thank you so much for that. That was very, very sweet. I did see that. I have it
set aside.
Okay.
Here.
Yeah. To open on the air.
I guess. I'm
okay.
Not sure.
Well, we'll do something with that. Thank you so much. That was such a generous gift. Really, truly. 813-90 Bubba. So last night I was watching a video about, I don't know if people are familiar with this. Probably most people are. Maybe not. I don't know if it's common knowledge. Are you familiar with the book called The Bell Curve?
Yeah.
Right. It's probably one of the most, if not the most controversial books ever written. If you're unfamiliar with it, it was a book written by two dudes, one of whom was lucky enough to die shortly after it was published, I think. I think the other one that survived was Charles Murphy. I think that's Eddie Murphy's brother.
Charlie Murphy.
I think it's Charles Murray was the other one that lived long enough. I think he's still alive to deal with all the fallout. It really wasn't the book that was that controversial. It was just a single chapter they did on intelligence and race. Yeah! I could have even told you that in the 90s that was not the way to go before everything got really woke. But essentially what they did is they collected a bunch of data about IQ, and, you know, people tend to look at IQ and maybe age or gender, but putting it against race is probably the biggest no-no that you could probably make in science or just in public in general. And they took samples from lots of white people, Asian people, black people, and they compared it, and they published their findings.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people were not happy about that.
Not happy.
Mm-mm. And so, again, one of the guys died, I think, shortly after, but the one that lived just pretty much went through hell, was called a racist, was, you know, I think pretty much banished from academia for trying to make it seem like some people had a predisposition based on race for intelligence over others. And they didn't make any of those claims in the book. They didn't say, like, oh, you know, white people have a lower IQ than Asians because they're inferior. You know, they just kind of, I think, left it mostly open-ended and just said, you know, this is what could possibly be it. But they didn't say because, you know, white people are inferior, or black people are inferior. They didn't make any of those claims. But people were just upset by the data. And so one of the guys who's involved in intelligence research, and I think knows Charles Murray personally, was on Lex Fridman's podcast. So I was tuning in for that, and they went into this whole thing about, should you even conduct that sort of research? What should you do with the information if you have it? Lex seemed to think that perhaps there was a responsibility on behalf of the researchers either to not research it at all, or if they do and it is comes out unfavorably by society standards, that maybe you shouldn't even publish it at all.
Lex thought that?
He was more playing devil's advocate, because the other guy was so like, you got to publish everything you find. And Lex was like, don't you think that you bear responsibility for the fact that your studies could be misinterpreted by the wrong people? Which is a fair question. I guess he didn't say like you shouldn't publish it, but he's like, should you be extra careful to say this doesn't mean X or this does mean Y? Like, make sure that it's very crystal clear that you're not a racist or a sexist or whatever the case may be. And the guy basically said, no, it's not your responsibility. Your responsibility is to just collect the data as a researcher and to publish the data. He said you shouldn't be afraid to, he thinks it's unfortunate, but, you know, you shouldn't be afraid as a researcher to publish something because, you know, you're afraid that someone else might misinterpret it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of an interesting discussion, and a lot's been said with, like, the studies that were done in the Holocaust by Dr. Mengele. Is it Mengele?
I thought it was Mengele.
But
I don't know.
Yeah, did Mengele. Horrible experiments with like twins and kids and changing eye color, just horrific sorts of things done by Nazi doctors. But, you know, there was a lot of data that was collected. So what do? Do you just shred the data or you just go, okay, well, we learned something here. Like, let's just not trying to compare that to intelligence studies or whatnot, but a similar sort of thing where it's frowned upon, society frowns upon it. So do we just throw it all out? Do we even research it at all? The doctor that Lex had on made it very clear that these differences still probably persist today, even though the data was collected about three decades ago. He said that there's really no evidence to suggest anything has changed, and that a lot of people, much like they're trying to do with the military and adopting women into combat units, a lot of people in high levels of education, boards of education at like Stanford and stuff like that are involved with a lot of policymaking, have suggested dropping standards, you know, in terms of testing. One of them, he said he was appalled by the fact that I think a woman at Stanford, she was like an education professor of education or something, that was involved in some sort of like committee or commission that was going to be involved in changing policy. And she wanted to make the claim that like intelligence, there's no genetic component. There's no genetic component of intelligence. And that there's no people that are more gifted mathematically than others. It's essentially just like your environment and if you have the right teachers and all that sort of stuff. So she actually wanted to eradicate like advanced classes because she just thought that it made other people feel bad that they couldn't, you know, they were unable to succeed if they were to take an advanced calculus class, for example. And, you know, this doctor was just beside himself, thought it was horrific. And, it was just interesting stuff regarding controversial topics. Do you even investigate them at all? Do you acknowledge them at all? Do you just assume that it's all because of the environment and they didn't have resources? Although he did say something that was like really interesting. He said that they conducted studies over several years and repeated them over and over again. And they said when you controlled for like the teacher and the level of education that they received from the teacher and also like the resources and how much money the school had, he said that the number one predictor for success, and I think they measured success by academic success, so okay, take that as you will. They said that the number one predictor was just essentially innate ability, the abilities that the student brought in with them. So essentially their innate ability. And he said that the resources that they received from the schools and also the level of the teachers was responsible for less than 10% of the variance of the students. And again, they measured this by academic success or, you know, how far they, if they got a graduate degree, which to me, I don't think is a great measure, but nevertheless,
it's a measure though.
But right. It's something to be considered, or I don't think they just took straight IQ. I think it was like they measured it by academic success. And they said that, yeah, so why would we be dumping all these funds into education and better schools when at the end of the freaking day, it doesn't really matter, is what the guy was saying. Now, again, no, I would need to look at the study.
That's BS, because even, like, even the quote-unquote smart or intelligent kids, like, still need to be taught.
Sure, and I mean, obviously, if the teacher doesn't even know how to do the math problem, but I'm assuming, and maybe I'm wrong in assuming, that the teacher has some basic competency. Obviously, some teachers are much better than others. But again, I think that this guy like knew what he was talking about. It's not like we're going to suddenly think, but did you think of this? He's like, yeah, I did. So,
but to go back to like the original thing, I think absolutely they should study stuff like that.
Because if you think it's a problem, what you shouldn't do, and what the guy was saying, is that you shouldn't not investigate it.
Right.
And he said, and you should look at it, see what it means, and that's the only real way that you'll be able to solve the problem, if you think there is a problem.
Correct.
But instead, they see the data, they're offended by it, they say that there's no problem, or that it's, you know, racism or whatever, they don't have the resources or whatnot, and then you blow more funds into mm-hmm. either education or something or whatever, and you don't see a change, and then you say, well, maybe it doesn't have to do with that, then other people get mad at you. So it's like, he's just like, you're going in circles, just doing this like dance, this, what do they call it? Like moral posturing dance, essentially, mm-hmm. where you're really not helping the problem. You're just like throwing the stamp on of like, oh, okay, well, this is racist or this, that, whatever. Yeah. So it was just interesting stuff of him, you know, he was very calculated in how he was defending, you know, the bell curve, because obviously the negative connotation it has associated.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, there should be basically nothing off limits that you can do
study
ethically.
On.
Correct. I mean, like, mm-hmm. you know, obviously, like, torturing and things like that. Like, that's, right. I'm not talking about that, but, like, at least, like, talking about stuff, you should be able to. Be able to present the facts.
Yeah.
Like, data, you know.
More information is always better.
Yeah, I was going to say data doesn't lie, but that's not true. It could.
Yeah.
True, data doesn't lie, but it's not always true data either.
Right.
But still, like, talk about it.
Yeah, right. So that you could actually try to come up with a solution that would work.
Right. And the thing is, like, the more data, the better. And because somebody else might read that study and you know, see something else that they didn't see, and then do a study based on that that might actually, like, have an impact on something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you were to describe intelligence, how would you do it? Like, what do you think intelligence is at its core? And again, it's very compartmentalized, but if you were to describe it in its most basic form, how would you describe it?
The ability to logic and reason.
Okay. Yeah, I would say something similar to that, problem solve.
Yeah.
It has a lot to do with, like, memory and learning, mm-hmm. I'd say. But again, there's different types of intelligence.
I was gonna say you can be strong in, you know, problem solving, but not be good in memory. But if you're so good in one, it could make up for not being good in the other.
Right.
You know.
And I feel like with a lot of neural atypical people, and I guess these are I don't want to say it's usually like this, because I feel like these are always the cases we hear about, right? Like Elon Musk, who's probably has Asperger's, mm-hmm. so he probably has a very, I don't want to say a very low EQ, but probably a lower EQ. Like, I've seen him interact with people. It's awkward. It's weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think he's smart enough where he can, like, pick up on things just by saying, like, oh, that person looked at me like this, and I know that this now means that he doesn't want to talk to me anymore.
Yeah.
It's not so automatic.
I like Elon. I think what he does is cool, but, like, I also don't like the fact when people are like, oh, and they did the same thing with Steve Jobs. They're like, we need him to run the world, which, being the richest man, he kind of does, you know, because he is so smart. God, he's brilliant. Like, look what all he's done. And it's like, well, he really didn't. Like, he grew up a rich kid that was lucky enough to invest in good investments, uh-huh. you know, and, like, he wasn't really the guy who, like, had anything to do with, like, the SpaceX program itself. He funded it.
Okay.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
Like, and we need people like him to be able to do that.
Right.
But, like, he wasn't in there building the rockets and, like, doing, like, he doesn't.
But even if he was, why would that make him a good leader?
Right.
You know?
But they say, oh, well, he's, like, so smart. Look how rich he is. He's so smart. He's got all. But he didn't do any of that.
I don't know. Do I think that the smartest people are always the most well-equipped to, like, lead, especially, like, lead a country? I don't know. I've been doing a lot of more research on the Big Five, the personality mm-hmm. Big Five, mm-hmm. because I've been listening to a lot of Jordan Peterson, and he often references it.
Yo, he's Canadian.
That is true.
Yeah.
So I should really discount everything he says.
Correct.
But
probably eats poutine.
Probably does. And loves hockey, but so do we. So I was looking up the Big Five yesterday because he always references it, and I would like to know exactly what the Big Five are, what they actually mean, all that sort of stuff. They're all pretty intuitive, except there was one that I didn't know what it meant, really, and that was conscientiousness. And so yesterday, I kind of did a deep dive into what that means. Like, okay. We can all kind of, like, it's OCEAN is the acronym.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like openness to new experiences, conscientiousness, extroversion.
Olive oil?
No. Oh, shit. No. Hold on. AAA is, oh my God.
Yeah, I don't know him, so.
No, I know what it is. And neuroticism is the last one. Agreeableness, excuse me.
Okay.
Is the A. So.
You should know that one.
Yeah. So I was investigating conscientiousness because I didn't really, like, I kind of knew what it meant, but, like, if you were asked, I was like, is it someone who's, like, kind of cautious? Like, I didn't really know.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a more of a deep dive yesterday into, like, what it actually is, what the they call the facets, like, the subcomponents yeah. are. So it's, like, people who are extremely organized in every which way, planning, putting things together. They're very tidy, all that sort of thing. Productiveness was the other facet where, obviously, you're pretty time efficient. You get things done. You follow through with projects. And the last big one was responsibility. So you're a very dependable person, trustworthy person, all this sort of stuff.
Okay.
And I think out of all of the big five, I would score highest on conscientiousness. Now, again, conscientiousness is typically a good trait to have, but obviously the downfall is it's also associated with a lot of mental disorders. Mm. Number one being obsessive compulsive disorder.
Hmm. Imagine that.
That's what the doctor said that was giving me the information. She goes, listen, it's great, but also it can run away from you. And it has a high correlation rate with obsessive compulsive disorder.
I went, huh,
interesting, cool. So I was kind of going through all of those things.
Like, oh, great, more to obsess about.
Exactly, that I'm too conscientious. But I think that a good leader would be someone who, if we're going to all of the through the things, probably moderate on the openness to new things. You probably want someone who is very conscientious, mm-hmm. very organized, gets shit done, productive, time efficient, all that sort of thing. You probably want someone who is pretty extroverted, right?
Yeah,
so that they can
yeah.
talk to the people, the public, because that's who they're representing. Agreeableness, you probably want someone who is pretty fucking low in agreeableness. Now, you would think that just being agreeable would be a good thing, but I also went into agreeableness and why women actually find disagreeable men a lot more attractive than agreeable men, because agreeable men tend to be...
pushovers.
Bitches.
Yeah.
Betas. So disagreeable doesn't necessarily mean that they're picking fights with everybody, but they're more likely to stand up if they think that something is a bad idea, for example. So they won't just go along with the crowd. If they did studies where they had people like in a group setting in an office and people were just pitching horrible ideas and agreeable people just kind of went with it because they didn't want to rock the boat, even though they knew that it was a shit idea. Whereas disagreeable people will be like, they'll go against the grain. They're not afraid of confrontation, of starting shit with managers and publixes. They're, you know, they'll just call it out as they see it.
I got an update to that, too.
Do you? I'm mm-hmm. excited to hear it. And so it's probably best to be a disagreeable person in the sense of the big five, not necessarily like just disagreeing with people for the sake of being, you know, disagreeing and being a pain in the ass. And then you probably also want someone who is probably pretty low in neuroticism, or at least can hide it well.
Yeah.
Because you don't need someone
that
who's...
That could be scary, too.
Right, right. And again, I feel like people who are low in neuroticism and low in conscientiousness and disagreeable usually fall into, like, the dark triad thing they talk about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like there might be some people that we work with that might be high on the dark triad. Which isn't necessarily a bad thing. Usually those people are very successful.
Obviously, Rhett's part of the dark triad.
Yeah. People high on the dark triad, usually it's funny because there's just like a couple degrees of difference between psycho serial killer and CEO.
Right.
Or surgeon.
Yeah.
Surgeons are tend to be very high on the dark triad, which mm-hmm. is interesting. So, and I think it's narcissism, Machiavellianism, and psychopathy. So it has a lot to do with like... being pretty emotionally stable, not being empathetic, having a feeling of self-entitledness, and also manipulating, the ability mm-hmm. to manipulate people. Mm-hmm. And a lot of women find that hot, by the way. You know, so
yeah, by the way.
Yeah, by the way, this is Dr. Dandiaco. No, but a lot of times that's why you see all these crazy serial killers and they have all these female fans that keep writing
pen
to them.
Pals and, mm-hmm, oh, of course.
That want to marry them even though they've murdered 12 women mm-hmm. in cold blood. So
all the hot chicks like to do that.
Yeah, women do not really.
No hot chicks ever do that.
Women typically don't like agreeable men. So I was learning about this through Jordan Peterson and his daughter, actually, Michaela Peterson, who also has a lot of insight on this stuff because she grew up with Jordan Peterson as a dad, so she just kind of like heard this through her whole life. Interesting stuff, but we'll take a few phone calls and get the fuck out of here. Hello, who's this?
Yo, what's up, Blumel? Biggie.
What's up, Biggie?
How's it going? I just realized that I have not called you into the show since like April. I know you're probably missing it.
Yeah, it's been nice.
It's been too long.
Yeah, right? No doubt. Fuck has been nice. Fuck you, Blitz. So it looks like,
I guess
Blitz is probably Porky Piggin right now, because this is more than likely just like a regular conversation in your relationship. And I just want to know how far into this relationship does it go, or this conversation, does it go before you start barking?
We'll probably start fucking either in a few hours or tomorrow morning.
But is pretty much how your life goes, or your conversation.
You know, yes. To be honest with you, we do have a lot of conversations like this.
I've had long conversations with Blitz too, and I can just kind of see that this is how your relationship.
Yeah.
Is.
Oh, sometimes my favorite times are usually, almost always on a weekend day, and you know we have like kind of a lazy morning, and we get into a talk about either plants or CBD, Delta 9, whatever. And then all of a sudden, we just go down a rabbit hole of Googling and looking shit up. Hormones is a big one with us. We talk a lot about tests and hormone therapy. We're both very interested in. So that's usually where we find ourselves on a Saturday morning.
I figured as much. So where does the barking come in? You know, I got to ask the Bubba questions.
Before and after.
Yeah, usually before.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, not during. No. That's not how we dirty talk.
Like,
no.
You're not like doggy style Googling shit, are you?
No, the phones are usually put away.
Yeah, we use Bing.
Yeah, we use Bing.
Good to see y'all happy.
Bing for the bang. Thanks, Iggy. Hope all's well with you. Hope to see you at Bubba 199 soon. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, do it.
Yeah, hope so.
Right.
Later.
Bye.
See you.
Hello. Oh, hold on. Hello. Who's this?
Hey, Anna. Your boyfriend. This is Gary. How's it going?
What's up, Gary? I knew it. What's going on, Gary?
Chasing the dream. You know those intelligence and race questions, or IQ and race studies that you were talking about?
Yeah.
Weren't they later used to show that the IQ tests were culturally biased, and then they changed the tests in ways which were more based on, you know, science, math, and stuff like that, and took out the cultural stuff? Because, you know, you and I taking an IQ test that had to do all with Native American issues, I don't think we would do well.
No, and I've actually seen this before. My senior thesis, when I was at UC Santa Barbara, I was working for this guy named Michael Gervin. He was a horrible, tiny little nebbish Jewish man, tiny and just a miserable man. But he did all these, I guess you would call them IQ tests, I don't know, involving these native people of Belize, and they would have to recreate these geometric figures, and they were unable to do so. And I remember going up to him and I was like, does everyone have, you know, extra chromosomes? Like, what's going on here? And he goes, well, these people have never been formally educated. They don't know how to use a pen. But then he would have questions where an interviewer was asking them, like, okay, you have 60 seconds, name as many fish species as you can, and they can name like 150. So, you know, obviously it was a little bit different, you know, and biased and stuff. But, yeah, I don't know too much about the IQ tests that have been administered in America and how they've evolved over the years.
It reminds me of some videos I saw recently. It was either on YouTube or maybe like Instagram or something. And the guy goes around town asking younger, they think they call them like millennials, even though they're really like
Gen Z or
Gen, whatever the younger ones are now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, can you name like three countries other than America? And they were unable to. And then he's like, can you name how many continents are there? And they're like, two. And then he goes, can you name the Kardashians? And they name all the Kardashians like instantly.
Right. And that's a cultural thing.
Yeah.
You know, that's like saying, can you name five rap songs to someone who's 65? You know,
sure.
They may not get it.
Sure. Yeah.
The current raps, top rap songs. So, yeah, I think they kind of use those studies that man that you were talking or those men you were talking about.
Yeah, they did, because, yeah, they did.
Have you ever taken an IQ test?
Yeah, I've taken
what is it, like 280 or something?
No, but the highest I ever got was 182, and then the last one I took was 160. So
you're a genius.
Well, I've been ranked that several times.
Yeah, anything over 160 is considered genius status.
Yeah, but, you know, again, some of them are just like you say, rote or memory type stuff.
Sure.
And real, I think, simple stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And then I've taken other studies where they try to determine whether you're going into dementia or mental cognitive problems.
You take those on a yearly basis?
And then they ask simple questions. Okay. It's like, okay, how can someone with, like, myself, 4 degrees and whatever, who may be, or like the Diakos, may be very intelligent people, and then you offer these tests to test their cognitive abilities, and they're just real simple. You know, you need to have a test that tests in super intelligent people whether they're losing their cognitive abilities at a different level. And Blitz, you're right. Jobs probably would not have been a good president, or Elon Musk and Donald Trump. You can name them all.
But they're not. So like Jobs or Elon, like they're not genius level people. Like they're, you know.
But who's to even say that a genius would be a good?
And I agree. Yeah. I have a question, Gary. What are your plans for this weekend? Like what do you do? What do you do on the weekend?
Well, like I said before, I'll either go riding 4x4 out on the ranch, or go. Actually, this weekend I would hope to go shooting some stuff.
Hmm.
Yeah,
nice. Very good.
I like to. I have a 380, a 12 gauge. Something else.
Do you put a MAGA hat on your target?
Oh, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Okay, beautiful. All right, yeah. Gary, we got to get
all
going.
All targets are red.
Yeah. All right. Have a great weekend.
All right, Gary.
Thank you.
Bye.
It was very pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty pleasant. All right. I think that pretty much sums it up for now. I hope everyone has a great weekend. I know we will for sure, because we're going to get some Ethiopian food. Or not. Or not. Don't give me that look. You scare me. I'm afraid of you. Have a great weekend, Blitz. Thank you so much for all you do.
You too.
And we'll see you on the other side. Bye.